My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Again, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week we answer another evergreen question, one of the fun ones I like to ask multiple guests again and again. But this week's guests are our friends from the Flashback 64 podcast, Guya McKenna. You definitely should be checking out their podcast if you like retro gaming things. You know, it's similar to like the books I've done with the 32-bit library books, but they're covering the things around and surrounding the Nintendo 64 library in a chronological order. So they've also got bonus episodes and extras speaking about different things that happened around the same time as well, just from a culture and eras standpoint. I've done a few episodes with them as a guest myself. I'll have like links and information for how you can check out their show below. But yeah, we got to sit down and chat, and we asked the question, what is your favorite video game console of all time? So again, just love hearing the answers to these questions and getting different perspective, and that's the whole reason to do it. Just sit down, have a good conversation, and have some fun. That's all I really got here. Nothing too crazy to discuss up top. Other than that, I will hopefully catch y'all again next week, and enjoy. Well, welcome back into another episode of my podcast. I've done a couple of yours at the Flashback 64 camp, and now you've done a couple of mine. But I have Guya and McKenna here again from the Flashback 64 side of things. So welcome back, y'all.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
To get rolling here, I know that you have the question already for the episode. You've already probably prepared some thoughts, and you're ready for that question. The icebreaker question that you're not ready for, that I want you to just, you know, consider on the top of your head, what video game character would you be friends with in high school?
Oh, in high school?
Yeah, I mean, you could say growing up, I guess, you know? Like, what video game character would you be friends with growing up? Who would it be, and why?
So I'm trying to think of the perfect answer for this, because growing up, I'm always, and I'm still to this day, but I'm just, like, so afraid of, like, people being mad at me or getting in trouble and stuff like that, and I just... You know, that like I'm very like introverted in a lot of like real life situations, but my best friend was always like this kid who is the class clown, who is always getting in trouble, always getting detention, suspension, stuff like that. So I feel like, you know, I'd like to say that it would be someone like cool and chill, but it would probably be like, you know, it would be like a Waluigi figure of some sort, you know? Waluigi. Some type of miscreant, you know? Let me think of a specific one, but you got...
I was just thinking, I've always been, like, quiet. So I was trying to think of, like, Link's friends, because he is the silent protagonist.
He's a good avatar for you.
What was the name of the girl in, like, the starting village?
Pick one. Maybe...
The starting village?
You know who I... Malin would be a good one.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because I actually had a friend in elementary and middle school who had horses.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well, if we're... if we're in the world of Ocarina of Time, I guess I like Mido would have been my friend, you know, like kind of a jerk. I don't know like why, you know, we hit it off so well, but me and him would be pals.
I mean, you'd be sitting back drinking some lawn milk and just enjoying the day.
Got the cow in the house.
Yeah, in the yeah. house. Yeah, that's. I wouldn't hang out at their house. I think that I'd invite them over to my house because I wouldn't want to deal with, you know, an indoor animal. But yeah, cool. Yeah. That's fun. I think I was thinking about this, and I think like Parappa the Rapper. I think I would be friends with. Like the storyline of the game is like he's just awkward and he just wants to be kind of like accepted and like, you know, he's like clearly like living in his head so much and so hypercritical of himself and not wanting to be embarrassed or, you know, put himself out there too much, but he really likes the girl Sunny Funny and like wants to impress her and everything like that. I'm like, I just, that is, I mean, just change Parappa to Darren and you have my like high school years of me meeting my wife and everything like that, being awkward and not wanting to be seen that way. So, I'd either really want to get along with him and like help him with his self-confidence as he helps me, or I'd be like super annoyed by him and thinking like, is this what I sound like? Like, I didn't want anything to do with you. So, I don't know. It might work out. It might not. But I think Parappa would be, my choice for a friend in high school.
Did you have a rapping aspirations?
No.
Okay.
No.
Cause I think the kid I knew in high school, one of my good friends when I was younger as a kid was definitely, he thought of himself as a rapper for sure.
That'd have been a little bit of a red flag for me, I think, if I was, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I liked, like, I got into like punk music and stuff in high school. And so like, definitely like, you know, even though I was convincing myself I was open-minded and accepting of things, I was very much trained on like, I can only like this and that is it. I have to judge everything else. Even though I'm being told lyrically to not do these things, that is still what I'm doing.
I was 100% like that when I started listening to punk music and stuff. It was definitely like, would not hear it out for other types of stuff. Yeah, that exact same journey.
Yeah, talking about unity in this open community and being supportive, awesome. But let's go ahead and put up some walls and make sure it's only sounds like this and only looks like this. And wouldn't be later until I've modified that message to my own adult way of thinking, which is still much, very much rooted in that same background and everything. But yeah, cool. Well, that was fun. Hopefully that was a good surprise one. I've come up with like a list of some of these, more of these icebreakers, I think, that are a little bit more odd. So I'm looking forward to asking more of these.
I like that, yeah.
But this episode, I'd like to hear from both of you the answer on this. But we've asked this a couple times before in the episode already. I think this is just a cool one to think about, just because, you know, obviously you'll share your answer. But I'd like to hear maybe, like, you know, unpacking why. Like, were there specific, you know, things related to it, or their moments in time, like the games themselves, whatever it may be that like y'all thought made this your favorite. But I'll just get the question out of the way. What is your favorite gaming console of all time? So yeah, I mean, I'll open up to you. I have, like I mentioned offline or before the recording, I have answered this question, and I think both times I answered, I gave different answers. So I will address that now. Yes, there was a PlayStation and PlayStation 2. I mean, it's still the same in my mind, and I'll flip-flop, go back and forth on all that stuff. But I'd love to hear yours. What do y'all consider your favorite gaming console of all time?
You want to go first?
Yeah. I'm going to say the Nintendo Switch. Mm. I have always been a big handheld gamer. As growing up, I maybe missed some of the, you know, home consoles, but I always got like the handheld, the Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, DS, 3DS. I like being able to game wherever, like, you know, nice comfy sofa or take it outside. And the Switch was a really nice extension of that, that could play more powerful games. It plays some of my favorite games, like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And it's also been a big home for a lot of indie games. And that's really where I got into playing indie games, especially early on with Night in the Woods and Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still play it on a TV if I want. I can play it on a giant screen.
Actually, I wanted to ask you that. Like, how often do you play it portable? How often do you play it docked? Because that obviously is that unique gimmick that the Switch has, is you can switch between those different modes. But yeah, are you more portable or are you more TV-based?
Probably like 90% of the time portable. sometimes when Tears of the Kingdom came out, I was like, all right, I'm going to put this up on the TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it first came out, I don't think for like the first year I used it handheld that much. Like, cause I was mostly playing, I guess, Breath of the Wild was the game that launched with it. But then as I did start to adapt to it more as like a, like playing indie games primarily, like a lot of, like with this past generation, I think that's been kind of the main type of game that I've gravitated towards for new games too. They're usually smaller in scope and stuff like that. So I really like that. But once I started playing those, I would do handheld a whole lot more. It felt natural and comfortable. And, you know, a lot of times I was just like, well, I'll just play it right here instead of, you know, even though I have the dock set up and everything, I'm like, yeah, I'll just keep playing handheld. Mm-hmm. why bother?
So then a follow-up question, which model do you have? Do you still have like a launch model that you had originally, or have you upgraded to like an OLED one? Did you get like an Animal Crossing bundle just to like get some color in your life? Which one do you got?
I have two Switches. Mm. I have like the launch Switch, and I got the Zelda Switch when Tears of the Kingdom came out.
Hmm. So
the OLED.
I still have the original.
How do save files like work with that regard? Like, I mean, do you not care? Like, okay, well, this is the one that I play these games on because I have like my save files here. And does it have the same online account on both systems? I forget how Nintendo handles that now, just because I had a bad experience in the past with them.
It does. It's connected to the console.
Oh, that Nintendo account. They have a Nintendo account now. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
So like, I didn't play it a lot, but I was able to start another Animal Crossing New Horizons save file, so I could start a new island without getting rid of my old one.
Mm.
And that was nice. Plus, it was nice to have like the extra storage space. Like, I got a memory card for my first Switch, but that's full now. So getting the second one, I was like, oh, I don't have to buy a new memory card yet. I'm not like very big into archiving stuff, because I'm like, what if I want to play this like tomorrow?
Just in case tomorrow comes, I might need to play this, you know, Overcooked too.
I like to jump around in games.
Yeah, I had a bad, both my wife and I had 3DSs, and I think we were 3DS XLs. So there was, you know, it was well into that ecosystem and everything, but she had like the golden, like, Triforce version. I forget which game came out that it must have been A Link Between Worlds, maybe. I'm not sure which one that was for, but we both had it. We were living in California. We needed to go up to a laundromat to do some laundry, so I grabbed our 3DSs, threw them in the laundry hamper with the laundry, you know, like kept it all in one bin. This is going to be easy. We pulled up to the laundromat. I dumped all the clothes in to get it started so we can just sit down and relax for a little bit, and then I'm like, where's the DSs? In the washing machine, they were, both of them. I was playing through Shin Megami Tensei 4 at the time, I remember specifically, because I had like that deluxe edition of that too. And completely gone, wiped, lost. All of the like 3DS Street Pass games, like the like gardening game and the Space Force game, like I was so obsessed with those and playing those daily and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And all of it was lost. They did not have, like, even though you like linked it to like a Nintendo like profile, it didn't save like purchases there. It didn't have like any kind of backups for saves or anything. And so when I went to get a new 3DS, I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, the nightmare, you know, I'll just re-download everything and start over on a lot of this stuff. I couldn't even re-download or re-access any of those old purchases because they were like tied to that physical console. They were like, the only way to get them is to do a data transfer between system to system. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a break from Nintendo here, and I will just pause my life, because all of this stuff is lost and gone. And it's been since then that I've not like fully invested in the Nintendo ecosystem. And I know it's bad. Like, the Switch has solved so many of those problems, and we have a Switch in the house. I just like look at it like just angrily sometimes, thinking like,
I understand.
you did this to me, Nintendo. But such a big love for everything that they've done. Obviously, I still love and support them. But yeah, that was just such a bad memory for me for gaming. I just like, so much stuff was just lost all in that one accidental laundromat incident of 2012 or whatever that would have been. I have no idea whenever that year was.
Oh yeah, that hurt to hear about.
Yeah, two systems down the drain.
Devastating.
Ugh. Yeah. But then, so from bad memories to good memories, then what, Gooey, what is your favorite system of all time?
I thought about it, and I had a couple I wanted to say, and then I thought at the end of the day, this is maybe the obvious answer, but I just want to say, I know this is not objectively true, but I'm going to say the Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever, all the criticisms of it, be damned. I think it had a lot to do with recently when we busted it out when we were at the Zelda Dungeon Marathon with our friends, and it was just, it's so, in terms of the four-player multiplayer thing, I think it's just one that still persists as something that's like, it's so easy to go from gaming or not gaming to playing a great like four player game with, like, it's just very easy to get into. We played a lot of games with our friends. You know, there's a lot of like games that have come after in like all the multiplayer series that are on that system that have been like improved in a lot of ways, but I'll never forget, like, with certain games like Smash or Mario Kart, especially in settings like where I would play with a lot of people my age who haven't kept up with gaming as much since they were kids. Like, the speed of those games is a lot like easier for like people to pick up and get into. Like the original Smash, for example,
mm-hmm.
I can play with any of my friends who were that age and played it back then, and it's like fun. It's like a fun party game, but like the following Smashes get a lot more fast paced, competitive,
mm-hmm.
things like that. I think same thing with Mario Kart and I don't know, all the multiplayer on there. So it's just one that I think still to this day is really easy and fun to play with a group of people, and so that's why it's my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I mean, I feel like Nintendo, like, they were clinging to, like trying to make sure they still captured all that with, like, the design of, like, the GameCube. Like, when the GameCube rolled out, having, like, the four controller ports, like, I think they envisioned, like, ensuring that that was still, like, part of, like, the appeal of, like, hey, you can still do this. You can still bring people over. This will still be quick and easy to do. And it was, definitely, but there was like, the ease of just slamming in the cartridge, turning it on, and within seconds, you know, you're not loading, there's no, like, waiting times. You'd be, like, instantly be able to be getting into games, like, so quickly. And just, like, the size and scope of them just made, like, just pacing and entertainment pretty quick and pretty fun. What are some of your favorite games and some, like, of, like, those highlight memories or things that you think that, like, really stand out the most for you then for the hardware itself, or for the system itself?
Well, I guess the obvious ones I should mention are the Legend of Zelda games, both Ocarina and Majora's Mask. Those are, like, two of my top five Zelda games. At any given day, they could be my favorites. And that's another one that I just was really thinking about it recently, because I played Ocarina of Time at the Zelda Dungeon Marathon, and we were racing it on every console it had been released on. Like, each person was playing a different version, and I had the N64 version, and actually I had an issue where my cartridge just crapped out and I had to start over, and we didn't want to reset or anything, so I was kind of starting with a deficit. But there was something about playing Ocarina of Time on it, we also had it on the old TV, with that controller, the original N64 controller on the N64, that it was so, like, there's something, like, comforting about it, that I wasn't, like, stressed out, like, whatever, I'm behind in this race or whatever. I just felt right, like hitting the C buttons to use the items, you know, mm-hmm. like, that I always have that muscle memory, like the songs in the game, for example. Like, you know, I've probably played the game even more on 3DS, the remake, but I will never be able to memorize, like, the Ocarina songs. You know, I always have, like Song of Time is right A down in my mind, you know, not whatever YLR or whatever it is on there. So, you know, the Zelda games are huge. I mean, it is honestly, it's just like a lot of the big first party titles were mm-hmm. the ones I played as a kid. But yeah, Mario, Zelda, all the multiplayer games, Smash, Mario Kart, Mario Tennis. Like, ooh, that's, I another love
Mario
one that,
Tennis. Yeah, that's a great game.
That would, it's just like even years after the fact, that would be one like my friend group would play, like, and it would be fun competitive game, you know, even amongst people who, you know, like, they did not persist into, like, you know, they, because of like music or whatever else they got into, you know, gaming kind of took a backseat, but you could still sit them in front of Mario Tennis and it would be like they would give you a run for your money, you know? So it's like, they that, just had it.
I've always wanted Nintendo to like recapture that Mario Tennis 64 vibe, like with the other tennis games, like that they've done, like they've done great jobs, even like with Wii Tennis and stuff like that. But, just the right design and pacing of that Mario 64 one, like drop shots and lob shots and, like, you know, being able to charge up your shot a little bit for extra power. Like, that was it. And everybody could do that. Once they added, like with the GameCube version and later, like those like special moves that would like throw an animation where a chain chomp would fall from the sky and start doing weird, crazy things. It was like, mm-hmm. Oh, now you're breaking some of the competitiveness and making it like more like a blue shell in Mario Kart and like an equalizer, when like, I really just wanted this like hyper competitive game, like that 64 one was. Like, I've spent hours on that Mario Kart or Mario Tennis for the 64 specifically. Like, that's definitely one of my favorite games for sure too. Just, I love that game. We have this like retro gaming system. It's called like a Polymega. It's from this company called Playmaji. All right, maybe I'm pronouncing that wrong. But it's modular. So by default, it has just like a CD drive, and it can play like PlayStation, Saturn, Sega CD, like all these old CD-based games just out of the box. But you can buy these things that you change the faceplate of it and put it on. And I bought a Nintendo 64 modular like adapter for it.
Oh, that's
and,
sick.
It's got a cartridge slot, and it's kind of like how iTunes used to be on a computer. You put a game into it, and then it rips that game to its internal drive, and so you don't actually need to play it off the cartridges or anything. But a neighbor who also runs a podcast called The Game Deflators, he's local, this guy named John, he let me come over and bring it, and he has his massive game collection. And so like I went through all of his Nintendo 64 games and was just like loading them onto it. And when I came home, it was like this wall of games. I'm like, okay, man, I could play a whole bunch of stuff right now. What am I going to do? And for about 45 minutes, I was just sitting here in my room playing Mario Tennis. Like, I went through like three different tournaments and I was like, I can play anything else. I have Majora's Mask here. I have like Rush. I have like all these like fun racing games. I remember like I have all these great things, but I was just like, no, I'm good with Mario Tennis right now. I'm good just sitting here living in this moment because it's a super good game.
It's a feel good game. Yeah, you're making me want to play it again soon.
It's too good.
I also wanted to mention too, because I recently just played a couple co-op levels of Perfect Dark, but that was like one of my favorite. That's probably like one of my favorite games on the console. One of my favorite games of all time. And you know, I know there was some issues with the quality of the port or whatever they had on NSO, but we just, when it came out, me and one of my friends played through like the first few missions, just co-op together. And I hadn't played it in a long time and it just felt so good to play.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, even though like that and GoldenEye have those wonky control schemes, I was kind of like, they should make another game that plays like this. I feel like my brain is more, I'm not a big FPS person, you know, I'm like, give me the weird N64. Like, I know boomer shooters are a big thing now, you know, quote unquote boomer shooters. Yeah. I'm like, where's the N64 shooters? That's what I want to play.
The rare variant of that, not the action variant of that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That thing, like I loved like the laptop gun and like the cool, like trinkets and things they did. They just definitely took what they were cooking up with GoldenEye and just had like a lot more time to polish it and make it weird for Perfect Dark. That was definitely another one that my friends and I played a ton of. That was a good one. Let me ask you then one more question then about the 64. I guess the Switch, the Switch doesn't get it so much. I mean, these days we all use like the modern controllers. Like, we have just like the, you know, like the standard official controller is what we'll use for all of our consoles. But back then with older consoles, there were so many third party ones and so many like weird ones that would even like oddly shaped ones and stuff. Was there a certain controller you like to use on the Nintendo 64, or did you actually use the official Nintendo one like exclusively?
We pretty much always use the official one. I think like occasionally like the Mad Cats or whatever would work its way in, but that would always be like, okay, we need like, oh man, we need a fourth player. All we got is this controller. Like yeah. it was never like that was never the primary controller that we'd use. N64, we typically just have like a gray or one of the colored ones. So we never got fun with it other than, you know, some cool colors, I guess.
Maybe it was just because I was poor. But yeah, we had the generic third-party ones. Like, we had the one that came with it, but then we'd have, like, the performance brand SuperPad or something like that, and, like, really even bigger and clunkier and everything than the controllers already were. But there were some, like, pros to some of them. Like, the analog stick on one, I remember being, like, it was, like, metal, and it never had that, like, loose, like, drift or, like, you know, wouldn't kind of, like, fail. Like, sometimes those Nintendo ones could if you were really aggressive with them, which, you know, kids sometimes are. But yeah, I just remember there being like a really cool and obscure like third party ones that I would enjoy using every now and then on that system. But yeah, like modern games, like, you know, I mean, I guess I've seen some companies release like whole new, like it's almost like those like backbone things, like, you know, replace your Switch controllers with these like bigger, you know, more ergonomic ones, but the main system can still slot in. But I've never been that curious to actually try those. I just like the comfort of like the smaller like Switch stuff, and that's I feel like it's already designed well enough. I've never really had the interest to even explore buying one of those things personally, but I used to do it all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah, I like the Switch design in general, but they do like I am kind of limited. Like I'll play games for a little while, and like I do get cramped on those. Like so I feel like my hands are a little too big. Comfortably play on the Joy-Cons for extended period of time, but also like I've never been bothered to like seek out any of they always look cool, but I'm like, you know what, it works fine. It's just a little uncomfortable. Like maybe when I get in the controller thing that they make, you know, not handheld, it works okay, and like occasionally you'll use like Pro Controller or something, but I'm usually just, I don't know, maybe it's just laziness, but I'm like, whatever, the Joy-Cons work fine until they drift, and then it's not fine. You just do Joy-Cons, right?
Yeah, I like being able to hold my hands wherever.
Oh, untethered.
You know, just like out here, or like even crossed.
I've tried to do that. I have to have like that anchor of like, if I'm going to have them separated, I either need it on the display, so like it's keeping it together for me, or that little like shell thing that holds them together like that. I have to have both hands like, all right, they're equidistant and you're like locked in. Mm-hmm. Got it. Like the mind of like being able to like still run around over here on my left hand and then like casually be moving my other hand around. Like I for some reason just can't do that. I don't know what it is. It's, you know, maybe, you should be an athlete of some kind, play tennis, you know, backhand, forehand. Like I just couldn't do it.
If it's more like a fast paced game, I probably need it to be like in something, but like, you know, if it's like a chiller game, that's not like too tough. I kind of do like that too. That's something I liked about the Wii was even better. Cause like it was just always designed to be held, you know, disconnected from the console. So like, even though you had that cord in between, like some of my favorite, like most chill gaming experiences would be lackadaisically, you know, like just putting my arms wherever with the Wii and chilling out.
Outstretched, 1 foot dangling over a couch, half slumped over, arms behind you. Just, yep. That nunchuck controller was comfortable. It was. And that's true. I guess I did play with that somewhat efficiently. But I think there were some games that like I did enjoy about that, like the Resident Evil 4 like Wii edition, where you could like aim with the Wii remote and walk around with the nunchuck. I was like, oh, I get this. Like, I'm going to separate my hand here because I'm going to point and like help my anxiety of being like blocked in by people. But that's a game I can't go back to anymore. I can't do horror games anymore just from that anxiety standpoint, you know, which is just really weird. I used to love them as a kid, but not today.
Resident Evil 4 I can always do just because I played it so much. I have, it's like comforting to play just because I know I'm not like an expert, but I just know like where most of the stuff is, you know. But like I tried to play RE7 and you go to that house and you go into the house and I just in the intro you go and the door closes and it goes pitch black, I immediately was like, I'm done, I can't play.
yeah that one up. I think I accelerated my fear with that specifically because I played the demo of Unreasonable 7. I was like, oh, maybe I'll kind of play this. And then in the interim, I think the PlayStation VR came out. And so I'm like, okay, well, I can put the VR on and then I'll make it less scary because I can, like, anytime I'm spooked or scared, I can just look around and see. And no, actually, it was the exact opposite. It was just like pure terror of being like, trapped in there. So I had a my friend, he came over and like we were like, yeah, let's just take turns. We'll play this. And like I was like uploaded it to YouTube, but like I played like 15 minutes of it and then like 7 hours of it. It's just him playing it and I'm just watching because like I just I couldn't do it. It was just... I got to a point where we got to the very end and like we never came back together and like finished it or anything, but like I was so close to the end and I just wanted to see it. So like I remember loading up into the game and just like the point that I'm at, like just remember just like leaning and just trying to look around every corner just so slowly. And like I was like, I can't do it. I'm just too beyond creeped out to like be able to play this. It's just the worst idea to do it in VR. And yeah, now I'll never be able to finish it. That's okay. There's other great games. Cool. Well, I mean, that's it. We did it. We successfully discussed this and I don't have to pretend to answer my own, PlayStation 3 answer about why that's my favorite PlayStation console of all time.
Would you really feel PlayStation 3? Would you feel strongly about it?
Well, similar to your points on both of you shared about like the indie games and everything, like the PS3 to me is where I was first like really introduced, like the original Hotline Miami. Like I shared that in like the previous episode of this podcast. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these like indie games, Super Stardust and, things, I guess that was a Sony thing, but, they really started to put out a lot of like stuff towards the tail end of the PS3's generation. And like that to me, I was like, wow, there's a lot of these games that, like I can experience that are like just downloadable only and just like directly digital and like smaller experiences. But those are the ones I started to really like fall in love with. And then the PS4 like ramped up into it, was really open to indie developers and it was a really great like platform for that. But yeah, I think the PS3, I think because of those reasons, like really obscure games, like Pixel Junk Monsters and The Last Guy. And like I said, the Hotline Miami games and, these things were really cool. So I think I could talk myself out of that wet paper bag and say it's my favorite one if I needed to, but I won't. I don't need to, and you know we'll keep it at the PS1 and PS2. But yeah, definitely the as much as the PS4 had that indie love there, like the Switch for sure. Like every time there's a Nintendo showcase, and I just see the amount of games. I'm like, is this where I start turning on my like the Switch and I start using this more often? And then I don't. Luckily at the end of the trailer, I'll see a PlayStation icon. I'm like, okay, eventually it will come to PlayStation. I can wait for it. But yeah, that Switch is an amazing platform. But yeah, that's it. Do y'all want to what have you been working on that maybe you'd like to plug? Are there some upcoming episodes of Flashback 64 that y'all can tease us about? Is there anything cool you'd like to maybe share or promote?
Yeah, we've mentioned it before, but like we cover a couple N64 games a month. And then in the spare time, we sort of cover anything else going on at the time, or like maybe older games by developers or things like that. So I'll just tease... I don't know when this comes out, this week or...
I will make this the Friday episode, yeah. So this will be July 12th. We are speaking to July 12th listeners.
So I'll just say we've got a run recorded. So our next episode is actually... We've previously done an episode about the highest grossing movie of 1996 when the N64 launched, which was Independence Day. And our next episode is with Dre from the Fine Time podcast. And we talk about the most popular album of 1996. That'll be the tease. And then we have a week after that, I still have to put it together, but we have an episode with Andrew Elmore, who's been on this show and our show many times. And making his debut is Brian Rigsby of Retro Game Books. So, and we're talking about some... actually, it's the first time we'll be talking about some games from the Sega Genesis, which neither of us have ever owned. Only one of us has seen in real life, one of them. So, yeah.
But you can listen to an episode where you speak about Spice World right now. That's a current episode. Yes. You have us live and available. So that's cool.
And go back and check out our episodes with you that we did like last month, I believe they were. We talked about GoldenEye multiplayer again, N64. The Tomb Raider episode was also a great one, too. Yeah, so
those were fun.
Yeah, check those out. Yeah. Those were fun.
Right on. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll definitely have you all back on for a future episode for sure soon.
Awesome. All thank right. you.
Cool. Yeah, thank you.